the third time's a charm.
Three is a magic number.
The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm.
Happy New Year and welcome to Third Time's a Charm, the show that takes an in-depth look at the third installment in a franchise. This is episode 15, Return of the Jedi, from 1983, directed by Richard Marquand. I'm your host, Darth Mike, and welcome to a galaxy far, far away. What better way to kick off 2019 than with some Star Wars? Today I welcome Jedi Master Kyle Reinfried, host of Foodie Films and co-host of PS I Still Love Hoffman. Kyle's back for his first solo appearance. He was previously on the Rocky III episode with his Hoff-bro, Late Night Rodriguez. Today Kyle came by for a while to chat about something that we often talk about, the Star Wars. While the focus of this episode is on Return of the Jedi, not the prequel Episode 3, which I'll get to one day, I must admit this conversation gets a bit out of control and serves more like a backdoor pilot to a potential Star Wars podcast rather than an episode of Third Time's a Charm. Kyle and I hung out like all day, so this is going to be at least a two-part episode. Stay tuned for the next half real soon. Now for the show within a show, No Part 3.
No, no, no.
Part 3.
Today on No Part 3, I picked an easy one. National Treasure. There's nothing I want more than more Nick Cage movies, and National Treasure 3 would be his very first Part 3 in a series. Cage has played Ghost Rider in two movies, and Eddie in two movies, both Deadfall and the pseudo-sequel Arsenal. But aside from the upcoming Croods 2, Cage isn't much for playing the same character twice. There have recently been very slight rumblings about National Treasure 3 when director John Turteltaub was asked about the possibilities while promoting his latest movie, The Meg. He said there is still a chance it could happen and that it may even be released on the new Disney streaming app as an original feature film for that service. So there you have it, not only a new episode of No Part 3, but a side of Third Time's in News, too.
No, no, no.
Part 3.
Okay, now for a few last words. If this episode sounds a little different, it's because it was recorded live and in person with both Kyle and myself in the room together with the movie on in the background. Something I haven't done on Third Time's a Charm since the very first episode, Superman 3, with Joey. Plus, since this is a part one, that means no book club today. Hashtag season one forever. However, I do believe there is a sneak peek reading of a very cool passage in this episode that is kind of a mind-blowing revelation and should appease your novelization appetite for now. So, without further ado, grab your favorite droid, your father's lightsaber, and plot a course to lightspeed, because here comes Return of the Jedi. Take a drink of blue milk, fresh from the teat, or whatever that creature is.
So was that blue milk or green milk?
Oh, I just assumed it was unpasteurized. Here we are, Kyle.
Hi.
How's it going, man?
It's going good.
Thanks for showing up.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for not just showing up in Force Ghost form, but being here in solid form.
I am.
But here we are. I can't think of a better friend to talk Star Wars with.
Aw.
Yeah, man, because I think when it comes down to it, you're the only one as crazy about Star Wars as I am.
It was the first time I saw the movie. No.
So right off the bat, special edition or original cut?
Oh, so we were going to record one day and then now we're recording a different day.
Yes.
So I had watched it on DVD, the DVDs that came out in 2004, those war crimes.
Yes, those Star Wars crimes.
Yes. Whoa. Wordplay. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and I watched it on VHS that came out in 1995, and they made sure to make you know, like, when the VHS started, the last time the original cut will be on VHS.
Really?
Yeah. They call it the digitally remastered THX, and it wasn't widescreen, but it's like, so the colors of the lightsabers are very vibrant. So they cleaned it up for VHS, but it's also, now this is a VHS from 1995.
Right.
And I definitely haven't watched it, this VHS, since probably 2004 when I got the DVDs, and so I'm happy it worked. I pulled it out of its sleeve, and I saw that it wasn't rewound. I'm like, God damn
it! Oh man,
like,
it doesn't snap. Like,
yeah, but what's cool about it, and I told you this before, is that there's a little interview that it's Leonard Maltin interviewing George Lucas.
Oh, they kind of look like brothers a little bit.
Yeah. My parents called me the little Leonard Maltin when I was growing up, because so, I was always critiquing.
You don't have to go far to cosplay as Lucas either, if you ask me. Just gray everything.
I just have to talk like this. I have to get like a bigger second chin and wear a turtleneck and just, you know, talk like this.
They must have put those out while they were working on the special editions, because I, like you, watched it originally on VHS for this recording, and I pulled out my VHS's.
Oh, Return of the Jedi and even the case. This was my favorite growing up.
So, okay, so let's get into segment one. Yeah. Tell me about your past with the wars, like how you discovered it, and then sort of like, I guess we'll wrap around to the first time you saw Jedi.
As far as Star Wars and like it coming into my life, obviously just growing up, as like the earliest memories, you just remember seeing like the toys on the shelves and Halloween costumes, and or even going to Disney World and it being at
Star Tours. That was at the MGM studio.
It was MGM.
Yeah. Okay. Did you do Star Tours?
Yeah, but I had no idea what Star Wars was.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, cool.
Like I was like 4 years old or something like that.
That's how they get you.
Yeah.
That's how they got you so young. Cool, Star Tours. I remember that. You all sit down and it's like a hydraulic ride and you just sit in front of a screen.
R2-D2 and C-3PO.
And a tour droid who's just like, welcome to Star Tours.
Yeah, exactly. But then I don't think I saw a Star Wars movie until around, like, I guess I was 7 years old.
Okay.
6 years old maybe in 1995. Right. And my aunt bought me that trilogy
box set.
And then right away, multiple Halloweens in a row, I was Luke Skywalker in all black, had the green lightsaber. I was Darth Vader, got like a very like official, for you know, a kid, helmet, not just like the cheap plastic, but like one that had
the apparatus.
Yeah, and it made sounds and everything. Yeah, and I watched all three in a row and everything like that, but Return of the Jedi was my favorite growing
really?
Up. Yeah.
Cool.
It was just, some could call it the most childish because of the Ewoks.
It's childlike. I'd say it's childlike. I think childless has more of like a negative connotation to it.
Yeah, it evokes much more like...
Yeah, it's way more... It really leans into the fantasy way harder and... Right, and the themes are more obvious.
But to me, it was just... Like Empire, like as a kid, like I was just like, oh, this isn't happy. Like a guy gets his hand cut off. Like, you know, Luke is the ultimate hero in the end, and there's Darth Vader's redemption. So just as a child, and I was pretty much a happy child. Like I enjoyed that of Return of the Jedi.
Right, you weren't exposed to like a lot of violence through films, maybe at that point.
No, I really a violent film. Like I did see Jaws at an early age, and that terrorized me. Like even, I couldn't go into my pool without being like scared.
But even,
you know,
that's more
swimming chlorine in a
like a psychological horror where they get into like body horror with Star Wars. Yeah,
for me it went like Return, A New Hope, or just Star Wars, and then Empire, and then now it's kind of like
We'll get there. You know, maybe this might be a good time to mention, if this goes well, backdoor pilot to Star Wars podcast. It's been on my mind for a while, and I've got so many ideas. Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm just always so fascinated how and when people were first exposed to this, because like I was born in 79. So even when I was born, Star Wars was everywhere. There was only one movie, but some of my first memories of actually going to the movies is going to see Return of the Jedi.
That's fucking amazing.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't like it is today. So back then, and especially Jedi, and because Spielberg and Lucas were doing this, there was like a re-release, or there was like an extended run. I didn't see it the year it came out. I saw it like the year after, like when it came to town. Not everything came on time back then. Like it would have to play around and stuff.
I've heard that even for like The Godfather. Some people saw Godfather Part 2 before Godfather, which kind of works, I guess, in a way.
But what was really fortunate was growing up in the age of VHS, like basically by the time I was 5 or 6, all this, as I called it, just Star Wars.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't really understand what the chapters in A New Hope was all about, really. So by the time Jedi was in theaters, I had seen Star Wars and Empire like several times. Yeah, I think even my first memory might have been walking through like a Toys R Us, rest in peace, looking at just the wall of He-Man figures, the wall of Star Wars figures. It was just everywhere. It was just inescapable sort of right from the start, which is interesting because that's the model to this day now, is like the type of marketing and everything like that. Back then, there weren't a hell of a lot of like cool toys. There was G.I. Joe, Star Wars toys, Transformers, He-Man.
I am like Jurassic Park was my Star Wars technically.
Right, right.
I love Star Wars. I am Star Wars. Okay, like I do have like more as a grown up more Star Wars stuff than Jurassic Park, you know, like collectible kind of things. But Jurassic Park was definitely my going to the movies, what Star Wars was for other people.
And that definitely filled a void that was needed to be filled too. You know, there was no Star Wars, so thankfully a Jurassic Park came along and was like, "Hang in there.
Yeah.
Like we're going to get back there."
And we almost had Mr. Spielberg as the director of this film.
Yeah, Kirshner passed. He didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
But one thing that struck me watching this movie is thinking about my niece and nephew and their age, and they're like 6 and 8 right now. Because like movie memories are some of my early memories, going to the movies. So like sitting in Back to the Future and sitting in Return of the Jedi. And I remember sitting in Jedi, and I guess I was in kindergarten. So my mom was like reading the opening crawl to me. And I was like, I don't need you to read. Like, I got this. Like, I could follow this now. I'm so happy about that. Like, I could read the opening crawl for myself, like, in the theaters. I just don't have any bad memories of this movie. Like, it's kind of amazing. Like, it just, they're all sort of unique. The second one's the dark one. The first one's more of, like, it's very self-contained
yes.
as a film. And then this one is such a strange beast because it's, like, tying up all these loose ends.
And that's the whole thing. It does a really good job of tying up loose ends. And I think, and then watching this, and I'm definitely becoming a bit more cynical to the, I love Star Wars and I will always love Star Wars, but I am definitely a bit more cynical towards the newer and the past two Star Wars movies to come out. And
we've seen the last 3 out of 4 together in theaters too.
I'm a bit cynical to the last two Star Wars movies come. I still really enjoyed them, but it's just so many years have passed and I imagine my Luke in a different light than they presented. But watching this movie, like, I love that it begins on this. I mean, they have to get Han back, and I'm sure we'll talk about Harrison Ford didn't want to be a part of it, but he is. I love the beginning mission that's like not part of the war.
A
so
serial.
Much more perfect towards that serial
yeah.
Buck Rogers,
mm-hmm.
Flash Gordon nature.
Well, this is almost just comprised of 2 serial episodes. There's the rescuing of Han and then the battle at Endor, or on Endor, to take down the shield.
Yeah, but I love the whole battle in space around the Death Star, and then just like this cold in space versus these, you know, the browns and greens on Endor.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, he has like the whole triple climax happening at the end of this movie, which was pretty interesting. He's able, that's a quite a juggling act, a very successful one at that, that I think he failed to repeat in Episode 1. You could see him trying to do it again in Episode 1, or trying to top himself, and it's like, no, like, you gotta pull back. And, you know, we built up to this. We didn't just start here.
Although Episode 1 does have arguably the best lightsaber duel of any of the movies. But, it, I mean, it might be the best song of the whole series.
I quite like Ren and Rey. Their duel on Starkiller Base. I just think
everything
really clicks
too.
At that one. I want to get into a couple things about the beginning of this movie that relate to it being a Part 3, and sort of how I feel those things come through here. The opening of Episode 4 and Episode 6 both start with a Star Destroyer in full screen, and well, the first one starts with a ship going into it, and this one starts with a ship coming out of it. Did you notice that?
That's cool. And Darth Vader shuttle that then goes into the
Vader shuttle to the rebuilt Death Star, which I thought as a kid was just the remains of the original Death Star.
Oh, not just... No, this one, like, I think I saw is supposed to be like 400-something percent bigger.
I wish there was more of a scale to tell. It's hard to tell this. It looks the same size.
I mean, it looks really cool. Like,
I think it looks cooler.
What's that?
I think it looks cooler, the way it's unbuilt.
Yeah.
I wish we got a little more of that in Rogue One, but I guess at that point, the secret was out. They're like, you know,
yeah,
it was its big coming out party.
Yeah.
It's like, we've got our dress on and everything.
Kiss me. Just like walking down the staircase, all beautiful, ready for the ball.
And then trips like several times. Like the Melissa McCarthy SNL skit. I don't know. And then we're back on Tatooine.
Yes.
After just like a brief little thing with Vader. Oh, I wanted to talk about that. So what do you think of the new subordinate guy that Vader has? Commander Jar Jarar. Have you ever known that that was this guy's name? So he's like the Krennic or the Tarkin of this Death Star.
Yeah,
like Vader comes in and it was like, the Emperor's coming. Like, get your shit together. And he's like, I need more time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the whole thing. So, I mean, Krennic definitely cowers a little bit more. Tarkin never cowered. Krennic cowered towards Vader.
Yeah, so he's more of a Krennic.
Yeah, but even more so. Like, it goes Tarkin, Krennic, and then...
And then Jar Jarar.
Exactly. So I just kind of looked at him as more of a stooge, but it's just the perfect setup of introducing the Emperor. Like, we got him in a hologram in Empire, but then he pretty much, like, says, like, nothing explains him better than Darth Vader, the biggest badass, like, of all time, and, like...
Pretty
like,
much, yeah.
Full, like... villain,
mm-hmm.
and he says he's not as forgiving as me.
And this is a guy who choked, what, 10 people over the last two movies?
Only movie that he never chokes anyone in.
Yes, you leave that to Luke.
Yes.
Which is scary, haunting,
scary, and he's
foretelling.
All black, and there's so much we can
do. So after a brief little stint, then we cut to the desert planet of Tatooine. We're back here. And not only that, it's like a R2-3PO lost again. You know, like, they're lost again. It's like exactly, I don't know, there's something kind of funny about how we're going to do the same setup.
And I love that because, I mean, in the original film, they're supposed to be the ones that, like, make us feel familiar with the story and really, you know, because in the original Star Wars, you're like, Jesus, there's giant ships and we're in space and there's just lasers and these white troopers and this guy in crazy black garb is coming in. You have no idea what's going on. And then you've got 3PO that's just like, oh, I hate flying and blah, 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 blah.
We are 3PO.
Yeah, we are even like, you know, one of the most annoying characters. Even like as a kid, I'm just like, oh, God, shut up, 3PO. Like, I felt like such a Han, like, you know, growing up because it's just how being annoyed by 3PO. But, you know, in this movie, it's just great to remember, like, oh, it's started with those guys on the planet and both of them and R2 just going his way and 3PO going another, and this one is just R2, like, you know, he's always hiding something.
What is with that? He had the plans in the first one and this he's got the lightsaber and he's not telling 3PO jack shit about any of it.
And the Revenge of the Sith, does the guy on Organa's ship, did he say, like, wipe out the droid's memories or just the protocol droid? Like,
just 3PO's.
So R2 remembers all
He even chuckles in the end of episode 3. They're like, wipe this droid's mind. And R2's like,
yeah, it's crazy.
So it's like, a little crazy the way droid. I mean, we can get into droids' rights in another episode of our Star Wars podcast. Like, we could have, I mean, there's plenty of droids to talk about. There's a whole cartoon called Droids about the adventures of 3PO and R2, and there happens to be an episode where Boba Fett is on. I think it's episode 4, and they are attending something extremely similar to what would now be referred to as a pod race, but they don't call it that on the cartoon. But Jabba's Palace, it's like the Cantina Bar times 10.
Yeah.
I never really noticed until I started this show and started looking for this kind of thing, but there's a lot of parallels. And like, they're here before they became annoying down the line with the extra movies. For me, I'm sorry, but I just have to say a few too many history repeating itself moments in the prequels and all that kind of thing. But here, it wasn't noticeable to me until this like umpteenth viewing.
Yeah, it's just like you said, it's just the cantina, it's Mos Eisley to like the extreme, and just so many new aliens that then you would buy the action figure. I mean, you know, Ewoks, how infamous are Ewoks? And the name Ewok is never said in this movie.
Mon Calamari, no, a lot of stuff is not mentioned.
So it's just, yeah, there's a world that I never experienced just because there were just so many books. I remember, like, I'm sure I still have it somewhere, but it was just a very, you know, it was for kids. It wasn't like an in-depth thing. And now, especially if you go onto like Wikipedia or whatever.
Which I just opened on my phone.
You know, I learned even just like by around 1995 when I started really getting into Star Wars, and I remember it was like a friend of mine gave me this book. Like, by that point, they, you know, like, it was like, oh, they're kyber crystals in the lightsaber. And so, like, I read much more about, there was supposedly a scene that showed Luke finishing off building his new lightsaber.
Yeah, there's a few deleted scenes, not on my Blu-rays, but on a Blu-ray collection and on YouTube, if you need to see them. There's a lot more with Jar Jarar as well.
But I mean, like, how awesome is it because Lucas, you know, I mean, you could call it awesome or you could call it like a bastardization.
That's quite a opposite there.
Yeah, but no, it's like, think about this. So the reason that green lightsabers then came into our world is that he was too afraid that people would just think that, like, oh, they found Luke's lightsaber that fell when he lost his hand. That's why green lightsabers exist. Sure, people knew, like, oh, that's a different lightsaber. And then he has the line of Darth Vader also saying, like, oh, you've constructed a new lightsaber.
Yeah, his training. It's part of his training.
Yeah, but that, yeah. But like, the biggest reason that it's green is because he was just like, kids will be confused.
I thought it goes back to browns and greens.
That would be awesome. But then now in lore, like, I've read that, like, green is, like, kind of like, if you get green means you're a bit more, like, technically, like, Qui-Gon hippie-ish versus, like, blue is much more...
You're liberal.
Yeah, like liberal versus like you're much more extremist. Studious.
I had always thought that it was green or it was its own color because Luke was sort of like a new form of Jedi. Like he wasn't exactly light or dark yet. I actually think he leans way more towards the dark side this entire movie. Like he's really feeling the pull of this entire film. You mentioned kyber crystals and I just have to go back for a second because something that wasn't quite developed or I guess was being developed alongside my fandom of Star Wars that I wasn't very privy to is the expanded universe. Which is now Legends. And how they
but
sort
some
of...
stuff is now being pulled from Legends.
Exactly. Right? I think that's really interesting just on the kyber crystal sense is that that was something from the expanded universe that is now said out loud in only one movie, but it's said out loud in Rogue One, kyber crystal. They charge the lightsaber. It's like, holy shit. Like, it's kind of... great in that sense. Like, I like that about the lore and the history and all this kind of shit, and that it's there, and that it's there to draw from, and that it's so expansive, and we could have a whole episode about lightsabers colors, and double-sided ones, and ones with hilts, and ones without them, ones that spin.
Yeah, there's things just in, like, there's scenes that we could do an entire podcast on, and then there's episodes of, like, things in the scene. It's a fruitful saga that, so I've got, I mean, you know Zach Bressler, and Zach, who was a mentor of mine from Ramapo, and then he was on P.S. I Love Hoffman for the Boogie Nights episode, and he loves Star Wars. He grew up through the 80s and everything like that and saw them in theaters, but he is a huge Lord of the Rings guy and thinks that they are better films, and sure, in Return of the King, you know, won Best Picture, yada, 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 and those are great because it comes from, like, a masterful book, but then I just go, like, this is just really cool, like, so, like you said, George, I know him first name basis, will go, like, yeah, sure, like, yeah, you know, oh, you like purple? Yeah, let's make a purple lightsaber. Like, it's kind of cool. It has become, Star Wars now is the people's.
Yeah, it's beyond him. And it's cool that even now he let it go completely and there's nothing he can do about it.
But then also now it's become too much of the people's that...
We'll do an episode on remaking The Last Jedi and what that means and how depressing that whole aspect is. However, speaking of modern expansion of the universe, believe me, this is coming back to Jabba's Palace because of Bib Fortuna, one of my all-time favorite Star Wars characters. But he, I want to mention, is because he is a Twi'lek? Is that how it's pronounced?
I think so.
And I know we really like this race of alien from the planet Ryloth, but this is something that I thought was really cool. I wanted to mention about Bib Fortuna. I never knew until I started looking him up. So he has a cousin named Beezer. And, like, take a look at this guy.
Jesus.
Right?
That's scary. That's like the Exorcist face almost.
Beezer Fortuna. You'd think he's a bad guy, right? He's an evil-looking dude. Now, there's not too much about him, but what I was able to find pleased me to no end. As a cousin of Bib Fortuna, he was a member of the Partisans, led by none other than the one and only Saw Gerrera.
Oh...
Listen to this. He was on Jeddah at the time of the destruction of Jeddah City. They don't say if he survived, but he was on Jeddah. He's aligned with Saw Gerrera.
Yeah.
Maybe my second favorite Star Wars character of all time.
I'm just so happy that Forrest Whitaker is canon now.
I just loved him. He, to me, invoked something like he could be in Return of the Jedi, that character. He looked, because he was very practical as far as his effects, and he was really putting on, like, a voice and a character is trying to, like, hide. But he can't hide because he's Forrest Whitaker, so he can never truly hide.
I need more. I was so happy that there was a couple episodes that he was in the cartoon series Rebels. Yeah, and Forrest Whitaker did the voice, so that's amazing. You get, like,
oh, that's good.
Award-winning actor to come onto Disney XD and do a voice. Like, it's just really cool that you get people, you know, you got Lawrence Fishburne now as, you know, in Ant-Man 2. I don't know, it's just amazing that you have these legendary actors that will play these smaller parts and then respect them and know that fans love it and will, you know, try their best to do it justice.
Like Max von Sydow shows up for like a minute and he's like, no problem, I'll do that.
Adds so much credibility.
Yeah. I also heard that in the new cartoon that Oscar Isaacs and Captain Phasma's actor.
Gwendolyn Christie.
Yeah, so they're actually going to provide their own voices for that show. Right? So everybody's playing ball together. I guess they signed one giant contract that says movies, video games, cartoons, or likeness for trading cards and toys.
I mean, you know, you could say maybe they did, like, sign something, but I just think that Star Wars evokes the inner child, and there's nothing better them feeling like a kid again.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a kid again, but to feel like the simplicity, the joy. Like, I wish summers felt as long as they did when I was a kid. As a kid, you were just like, oh my God. Like, to think about that summer would drag on again, like, what a treat. And then just even back then, it was like there was one summer movie for the most part. Maybe two big movies in the summertime. And obviously in Star Wars, I think just, you know, for Oscar Isaac and Gwendolyn Christie and Forrest Whitaker, they're just like, you know, I have to go into a sound booth. I can wear comfortable clothes versus these crazy outfits. And I go in there and just, you know, ham it up and have some fun. And
they're really striving for continuity now that Disney sort of has their hands on the reins. They're like, let's make sure everything fits as best as possible. And so, like, let's not recast Poe Dameron for a cartoon.
So happy of this world we live in for that sense. Like, okay, there might get a point that, like, even I'm a little cynical towards the last two Star Wars movies that came out, but still, like, I enjoy them.
But we're a Rogue One fan.
I love Rogue One. Has a top 10 Star Wars scene in my mind, and that's
The Borgalette.
It's Darth Vader going on the show.
Oh, of course. For me, it's Darth Vader in his medical tube thing. Well, like, that is one of my favorite shots.
And there you go, people. And that's probably why I also really enjoyed Rogue One, because we're going back into a world.
It's a prequel.
Technically, the Star Wars stories are another way of very much attached to the original trilogy.
Well, the other ones are attached to your... It's got fucking Anakin turning into Darth Vader.
I know
what you're trying to say. Yes, it's more closely connected.
And that's why
connected.
I also really like Force Awakens, because it was just, like, still very much like the older ones. And anything I enjoy in these new Star Wars movies are because it has something to do with the older characters.
That's very interesting, because my favorite stuff... aside from Luke, because I love what they did with Luke, my favorite stuff are the new characters. Like, I love Finn and Rey, and Kylo Ren is, like, maybe the greatest Star Wars character.
Yes, but he's the son of Han and Leia, so that's why, like, I care more about him, because he's attached, and that's not me clamoring for Rey to be, because then it'll just feel, like, old and forced. So I don't know, like, I am a constant contradiction of myself, and I realize I have an internal
I would probably we'll get to the, you know, Force Awakens podcast eventually, but, like, I kind of was expecting Rey to be connected to Solo, and for Ben or Kylo to just be, like, an enigma. Like, we don't know, we won't know his parents, we'll never find out. Like, I thought, but they did the switch with those two characters, which is fine. The more I watch it, the more I like it. Back to the Return of the Jedi. Or should I say Revenge of the Jedi?
Ooh, you threw that one down. Yeah, that's the original. But then they went, no,
poster.
That's not very Jedi code. They don't commit revenge. It's the return.
I've heard some interesting theories about the name of the title Return of the Jedi, as in, who are they referring to, Luke or Vader?
Oh, in that, yeah, well, that's that the whole sense, thing in a lot of...
If it's Vader's story from 1 through 6, it's the Return of the Jedi.
And even when there's a very, you have to listen very closely, but when he picks up Palpatine in the non-new version, where before he, like, because now he screams no.
No!
It's a no. No!
Yeah, it's like a double no,
it's a double
right.
no, but it's a short no and a long no.
Well, so was the original 3 or 2 also in episode 3.
See that? Like, when I saw that in theaters, and I don't mean cried in disappointment, I cried at that moment.
Out of feels for Annie?
Yeah.
Oh, Annie.
When he starts crushing that stuff, I'm like, that was one of, there's movie moments that I go, like, that would be such a visceral emotional experience to experience.
Yeah.
But God damn it, I never want to experience that. But at the same time, I'm just like, I'll escape a bad line and bad acting or bad CGI, and I'll go much more and use my imagination and think like what he is going through that moment. And in that moment, he's just like, everything has fallen apart in that world. And that's what I feel. And that's why it's fucking, I'll quote Ben Kenobi, it's a certain point of view.
No, look, I think the scene ultimately works for what it's trying to accomplish. I just wish he, well, first I wish it came an hour earlier into the movie, number one.
The whole third movie should be him as Darth,
should have been.
Maybe not in Darth Vader costume, but the whole third movie.
End
of the second one should be, you know, like the whole Luke is betrayed in Empire and gets his hand cut and finds out this big thing. Obi-Wan at the end of Attack of the Clones should find out that Anakin's
changed his name.
Come on.
I don't know how it happens. I look though, I just think if he had just screamed, it would have worked great.
Yeah.
It's just really weird to hear James Earl Jones said, "What of Padme?" Never thought I'd hear him say that. But now he talks all over Rebels, right? Is that James Earl Jones?
Yeah,
Rebels?
Came back, yeah. I mean, God bless the man just for still, I mean, he's up there in age and he's still acting.
Yeah, for keeping it up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at the same time, he was, like, doing, like, a Broadway show, and they're like, oh, we didn't want to, like, take him away from that, but it's just like, he was in three huge movies of, like, my childhood.
Star Wars, and what were the other two?
Lion King and Sandlot.
Oh, right. Lion King, and then, of course, the Sandlot's terrific. I feel like the CGI and the effects in the prequels were out of control. The new movies are really good. Very hard to detect what's real and fake. They do a great job of blending. Yeah. Return of the Jedi, maybe the last... I feel like it's the last movie you could look at and be like, that is a full-on creature feature. Every trick in the book, everything is there on screen, animated in multiple ways, and culminating in this thing called Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah. I think it cost $500,000 to make, they said.
They said molding him was several tons of clay to make the mold. I just can't imagine, like, the amount of work that must have gone into Jabba. And then just nowadays, it's just, like, all that craftsmanship would be just not even explored or anything. It would just be, like, a fat guy. Like, they originally wanted, it would just be a fat guy in a target suit with, like, little targets all over his body, you know, in a gray sock. And then they would just paint over him with, like, CG Jabba. Like, they ended up doing in special edition.
Yeah,
like, this is way better than any... This is the best Jabba. By far, I think.
Yeah, it goes Jabba, and then Pizza the Hutt, and then...
Oh, as far as Hutts? And then maybe Stinky from Clone Wars? It's Stinky. We'll get there. That'll be a whole other episode. The Clone Wars will take year to cover.
Jabba, just like, I love this whole world of gangsters, which is cool that they're, like, obviously getting into with Solo, but who knows what'll happen with Solo now since it didn't perform.
Well, hopefully that won't matter. Hopefully they'll pick up a lot of that stuff with Jon Favreau's TV series. Maybe they'll pick up a bunch of that Crimson Dawn stuff with, like, the TV series and everything. And Darth Maul and Kira can show up on Jon Favreau's show and, you know, weave in and out of the films. Because they're basically, instead of saying prequels, they're saying Star Wars stories.
Yes.
Like, the stories are prequels. Solo, a Star Wars story, is a prequel. It's kind of interesting, I don't know, to know where Han Solo ends up on the slab hanging as art. Is Han art?
Oh, that's art, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, as a human, he's just... We're all art. We're all pieces of... Love your body.
I almost expected Lucas to put in, like, several more people frozen in carbonite next to him.
Yeah.
In the special editions. Like, it's remarkable that didn't occur to him. Where he's like, Jabba should have a couple guys like that he struck down and...
But that wasn't Jabba's idea.
No, that was Vader's idea.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Yeah.
But maybe, I guess, one... But then
maybe it sets a precedent.
Sees that he's like, that's my... He's
like, yeah, like, keep doing that.
Yeah. Isa de Solo.
Kyle is doing a great visual impression of Jabba with the strangle tongue. Jabba's definitely a space pimp. When we get to book club, he traffics in human slavery. I mean, he is just a despicable creature.
He's a great bad guy.
He's the old. It's almost a shame that he only lasts like 30 minutes.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, that's the one thing. Like, Star Wars definitely will create characters that you appreciate and you fall in love with, but then they're, like, taken from us too soon.
Which I guess is, you know, that's just part of storytelling. Like, you can never really tell who's going to hit or miss an icon. Yeah. I've listened to two commentaries for Jedi before this. Several times during the Sarlacc scene, people are like, yeah, no one knew people loved Boba Fett that much. Yeah. Like, there was no internet. There was just, like, Starlog magazine, people writing into
people
us.
People were buying the toys, but, like, whatever. Like, it doesn't...
Yeah, but they were buying all the toys. Yeah, it was really... Yeah, yeah, so...
Yeah, there was no... Like, the online community now for... Again, there's, like, for as much good as... I mean, that's... I feel like there's just always... I mean, Star Wars just teaches you everything. There needs to be a balance. As much as there is good, there is bad. And so, like, and for there to be good, there needs to be bad. And vice versa. And so that's as much as you had back then, this innocence, and that's what made those movies good and honest and true, is now, like, you've got this... huge community, and you have the nerds that grew up watching it that are in charge now and doing making this connective tissue, but then you have these nerds online that are just, you know,
that's what's
clamoring
so,
for heads.
That's so that's what confounds me, is that, like, I'm a nerd who grew up with Star Wars, and let me tell you, just like being in high school in the 90s, it was not cool to tell people you liked Star Wars. Like, yeah, Star Wars was not mainstream when I was growing up, which is hard to imagine, because, like, as a kid, no one cared. Like, oh, you're a kid, you love Star Wars, great, here's some toys, here's some bed sheets, here's a t-shirt, like, go nuts. And then when you're like 16 or 17 and you're like a sophomore or junior in high school, and you're wearing a Star Wars shirt, like, no one's talking to you. Like, people are actively avoiding you, to be quite honest.
And it was the same when I was in high school, and when I was in high school, two Star Wars movies came out.
Oh, that's right. Episodes 2 and 3, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They came out my end of my freshman year and end of my senior year.
Yeah, because I remember seeing the special... So this is crazy. There was a moment in our high school where everything shifted, and it happened a couple times with a few different things, but like with Star Wars, when the special editions came out, I remember going with my friends to see the re-release uptown, and it was like a fucking party. It was insane. It was like the day it first came out. I had no
Price
idea.
Price has returned.
And then after that, it was fine to like Star Wars again for some reason. Like, everybody was down with it. It was integrated into popular culture more. Every movie Kevin Smith made had, like, multiple Star Wars references in it.
Well, yeah, definitely had a comeback. And it's weird because, so we're talking, Return came out in 83, and then the movies were re-released in theaters, the special editions, 1997, and then we get Episode 1 in 99. So, at most, before a new episode began, but we'll call it 1997. So that's a 14-year period, and obviously it was still, like, a little cool after, like, 83 and for a while. So it's not that long a period, but it did fall into, like you're saying, you know, this not as... cool, you know,
there was a dark time.
There was a time
where they were cut off from the Force and living on an island somewhere with a bunch of adorable porgs. Someone asked me, Brian asked me, he goes, would you get a porg tattoo? And I said, not only would I get a porg tattoo, I would get several running around my leg, like, dressed up as different things, like a cowboy, or like one with an actual NASA helmet on, like, just adorable porgs running around me. Okay, so this character here on screen I wanted to bring up with you. Do you recognize him?
He's from the Jawa. But isn't he...
Oh, was he actually in the Jawa crawler?
Yeah.
He was in the sand crawler? It's funny, I never noticed until I watched it in widescreen, but Dengar is in Jabba's palace.
So bad with names.
He's the one who's like in, and he's the bounty hunter who's like wrapped in sheets in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But he's got like armor over his sheets.
Yeah,
he's only viewed from the back. I was like, Dengar, that means maybe he died. In the legends, he pulls Boba Fett from the Sarlacc pit. Okay, so EV-99. A feminine data EV supervisor droid. So this is a female droid, which is why I wanted to bring it up. Because everyone went crazy over L3 this summer.
Yeah.
For one reason or another. Claiming that, like, finally we get a female droid and all this stuff. And, like, that's great. She's a great character. But I just thought it was crazy how Lucas was just like, there's boy droids, girl droids. Like, let's not make too much of a fuss. R2 could be a girl. We never even know there's gender. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't even...
True.
Kind of assigning genders to droids is a little peculiar, I feel, in the first place.
Yeah, I guess people... I mean, especially back then also... And then continuing until now that we have, like, women... like pilots in the rebellion as well and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there were supposedly at least like 6 different female actresses filmed as pilots, but they end up...
Oh, those are
footage.
In the deleted footage. Yeah. And you might want to divert your eyes because we're coming up on the first of the special edition changes. It's just, it's so hard for me to watch.
Yeah. Like, just keep the blue elephant thing.
He's great. Max Zebo.
Yeah.
So I think this character was the one we were, that guy right there. I think he was one of the dudes, and I shouldn't just say that guy right there because people aren't watching what we're watching, but he's the new lead singer with Cy Snoodles for this Jabba the Hutt sequence. He apparently is a Teek from Endor as well. We were talking about Teek the Teek a little before we started recording.
Really?
So apparently he's a creature from Endor, which I guess he wanted to foreshadow that we're going to end up on Endor eventually. So if you watch the special edition, and or if you watch these in order and don't know that we're going to be on Endor, you see this creature, if you're well versed in the universe, and you'll be like, oh, he's from Endor, maybe we're going to go there this movie. Okay, here's the old one. And here's the new one. Of all the changes in all the special editions, do you like any of them? I mean, across all three of the movies that they did them for, 4, 5, and 6.
So, you know, like Tatooine and adding the Dubaks. That's fine. And then
that's my number
two. Making like better explosions, brightening up the lightsaber.
I don't even really like the tweaking of the models during the Death Star run in Episode 4. Like, you know, they changed like the attack run.
They made
it like full CG and everything.
Oh, they added some X-wings to it, right?
They added a couple extra ships and they beefed that up a whole bunch. I only actually right now sit comfortably with two changes. The second one is the Dubaks. I just love that Dubak scene so much. And that was like a toy I had as a young kid because you could just put the guy in the Dubak.
Awesome.
And the other one I really like that I think works is in Empire when Luke is fighting the Wampa and he cuts his arm off and then they cut to the Wampa holding his nub. And he's just, there's just a quick shot of him screaming, and then they cut back to Luke, and he scrambles out of the ice cave.
There's not the shot of a Wampa holding its nub.
Right, originally.
It just shows.
It's more like the cantina scene, right, where there's a swipe, something happens, there's a roar, and I think you just see him sort of come at him.
Yeah.
And now they cut to a shot of a guy clearly in an abominable snowman suit going, roar!
Okay.
But it works. It's so Star Wars to me.
That's cool. Yeah, that's fine. Like things that, I don't know, don't like create like new questionable like continuity story stuff. Like obviously the biggest being, and it's prevalent to this film, like Hayden Christensen's Anakin. That's just
what a horrible note to end on. Because it's right at the end. It's the second to last shot of the movie.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they end on the celebratory shot of everybody clapping at the end together.
And then obviously I have a big gripe of them changing the song.
Here's the old. And here's the new.
I'm fine with them going to the other cities and showing them being happy.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But I'm fine with that as
it's an interesting
story concept. Yeah, that's okay with
me. I'm a little surprised every movie we don't add an extra scene to the new release of Return of the Jedi where we flash to a new planet we've been to. It's like, dude, why don't we cut to Jedha?
Yeah.
Jedha would be loving it the most.
Definitely. But then, I mean, that also brings into question, like, the rebellion so small that maybe people are happy. Get off your asses, people.
Really?
Like, don't be
honestly
stooges and just, like, giving in to the Empire. Unless the Emperor was, like,
well,
that powerful.
It kind
of
is.
And kind of like did a brainwash of like everybody.
Well, it's like it's a propaganda campaign. Like you saw Solo, how the Imperial March was reworked as like, come join the come join the military, fight some rebels.
Now canon is like music.
I'm cool with that. But I'm just saying the Empire is so prevalent that it is like, yeah, I could either live my life alone on the streets of some gutter planet, or I could join the Empire and see the galaxy.
Yeah.
Even Luke talks about joining the Academy. We don't exactly know. That could be the Empire Academy to learn how to be a pilot or something. Biggs joined, and I think even maybe in the book somewhere along the lines. Oh, no, it was in an episode of Rebels. It was a really great episode of Rebels with Wedge, where Sabine sort of goes undercover,
Ezra,
right? Yeah.
And Ezra go into the Academy.
Into the recruits and stuff. And Sabine was even a recruit at one point. So there's like a cool precedent there of people jumping
ship.
If you're
young and you're talented and you're like, you want to,
It's cool how they get them young. Just like Star Wars itself. That's like the motto. Well, I mean, even the Jedi, right? Like, you have to kidnap babies, ultimately.
Yeah, you go.
Not kidnap,
like,
but
no, but
I'm
go,
sure the
you
conversation.
Go to a and you're like, your child is very.
Yeah.
You know, there were a couple times that they're like, no, I don't want to give up. It's like, well, what it'll take? Blue milk free for life.
Well, even that, I mean, there's just something, a little something that you could do to a bit of a weak minded individual.
Exactly, yeah. It's a little
and
Jedi.
Just be like, you will give me your baby.
Little Jedi mind trick.
It was your idea.
Yeah.
Hand it over.
That's
like,
creepy.
It's so scary.
No, and that's the whole thing, that even the Jedi aren't perfect, because the whole thing is like, you shouldn't be like in love with someone, but you should care about people, but you can't love. And that's why Luke is also saying that the Jedi have to end. Like, there is, both sides aren't perfect. Obviously the Jedi are much better than like the Sith, or just the light side versus the dark side and all that kind of stuff. Or just the Empire as like a political entity, you know, because there were plenty of problems with, as we saw in the Senate as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, and again, there's always going to have to be, and that's why the movies will always exist, because as long as there's good, there's going to be bad.
I feel like it wants to talk about the gray areas, and like a lot of characters in Star Wars that are Force wielders are either like yes or no, like dark or light. And I think the more interesting people are like when they try to find a new way to incorporate the Force into being. So like, that's what I loved about Last Jedi so much, is Kylo has such a different view of what things can be. He's like, I'm actually seeing a future without labels. Like, we don't need to call ourselves Sith or Jedi or whatever we want to call it. Like, let's just use the Force how we think we should.
But he's saying that, but then he clearly like wants to run everything.
Well, yeah, I know.
And that's,
but the new world order,
his grandfather wanted as well.
Yes, but I also feel like Luke tried, and to his extreme was cutting himself off entirely, whereas Yoda says you just needed to move beyond what you've learned. You know what I'm saying?
Failure is the greatest teacher of them all.
Absolutely. And I feel like that was sort of what's bestowed upon Rey now. And so I feel like Kylo and Rey are in some interesting positions now, where we don't need labels like Jedi and Sith and, you know, all that kind of thing. Like, it'll be cool to see. Like, Maz Kanata is a very interesting character to me, because she uses the Force, but she's like, I don't need to be a Jedi. I don't need to be a devotee. Yeah. I could just have it be a part of my everyday life, because we are all one with it.
And why am I blanking on Anakin's Padawan? Ahsoka. Like, that's also what then she goes into, and then she comes into Rebels World, and she's, but she is still using the Force and lightsabers, but they're white lightsabers, because
she's on her own path, is I think the point. And I think that's what's most interesting about what they're trying to do with it.
Yeah.
Luke is walking a very fine line in this movie. When he first shows up in Jabba's palace, he's acting like a Sith, and he's choking people left and right, using his mind manipulation on Bib Fortuna, killing the Rancor, like really wreaking havoc in a way that doesn't seem becoming of a Jedi necessarily. Like when Obi-Wan took down Grievous, there is just such like a lighthearted sort of like more of a swashbuckling element to it. Yeah. We get there on the skiff and everything. I think the skiff is a little more lighthearted.
Is it kind of interesting that, again, since we have it on the background, that this is a similar meeting to how they meet in Now Solo, that's now canon? They're like in a dungeon, and first Han hears like a noise and he's not sure. He's like, Chewie? And then he comes out and they're friends versus fighting at first in Solo.
That was an interesting scene. This plan is very convoluted. It's basically like Luke saying, everyone go get yourself caught.
Yeah.
I need you all as like point men on this.
Prove that now I'm a Jedi.
Like, well, no, and then like I'll come in and I'll get caught.
Yeah.
And then, like, I know Jabba, so he's going to want, like, this... He'll be really pissed. Like, I'll kill his creature. He's going to want to sacrifice us over the Sarlacc pit. Just trust me. Yeah. I've seen it. Like, this is one of his premonitions, or he's like... It's one of his Joker moments, where it's all part of the plan.
And then Mark Hamill becomes the Joker, so...
Oh, that's right. Hey, great call.
Hello, Batman.
Hello, Vader.
Hello, Vader.
Hello, Emperor.
Jabba.
Ooh, hun.
Yeah.
Anyway, that would have been, that'd be great. Someone, because Mark Hamill does, like, he reads those Trump tweets as Joker. It'd be great if he overdubbed Jedi as Joker.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, I mean, it's really only R2, again, is in on it, is knows what's going on, is down on the plan, because it's when he gets to the skiff, right to the edge of the plank, he's going to walk the plank.
Yeah.
And he gives that little salute that Luke loves to do.
Luke knew that R2 would be then used as a bar cart.
Right.
Would be, happen to be on that skiff.
Versus, yeah.
You know, even as a little kid, I'm like, wait, why isn't Luke using the force to press down the lever
for the Rancor thing? Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's, you know, there's plenty of stuff like that.
Yes, yes,
you know,
yes.
That
why isn't Leia still saying a word when she's dressed as Slave Leia? She never says a single word until she kills Jabba, and then she says, let's get out of here.
Which I totally, I mean, there's obviously plenty of people that are just like, oh my god, you put her in like a metal bikini. I'm like, yeah, and then she kills her captor. Like, that's pretty, like, I don't know, empowering to me. Yeah, so, I mean, by all, like, I mean, I still, even as a kid and still now, I'm like, ah, there's certain things that, like, he didn't think about too much of his world, you know, that he has these powers. Or even on the skiff, Luke does a high jump to get out of the carbonate before it goes off.
Right.
But, like, in this, he just kind of, like, does a leap and is, like, holding on to the side of Jabba's
thing. Still impressive. It's still pretty impressive,
no,
if you ask
just,
me. He also,
I mean,
does, like, that triple Lindy.
Impossible where a real-life Tom Cruise did a giant jump, so.
It's true, it's true. But like, he also does, like, that triple backflip thing off of the plank,
yeah,
and everything,
yeah.
And he kicks a lot of ass, and
yeah,
him and Leia swing again. They swing again together. They both go on a rope, and they swing, just like in the first
movie.
They
swing on swings, and they seem to maybe have swung in a...
You think they're swingers?
Before they found out their brother and sister.
Oh, before they go off to find Han, let's just have one good luck night together.
This was one thing I read that I never knew before. So supposedly one of, you know, because there's, you know, some things that were changed about this movie, like the Luke was supposed to go walking off into the sunset.
Leia wasn't going to be his sister. That was going to be left to further episodes.
Yeah, I didn't know that thing. And the character's name was, I read, Neelith Skywalker.
Oh, I never knew that.
N-E-L-L-I-T-H. That was going to be 789, because supposedly she was taken and brought to the other side of the galaxy and being trained by somebody. That's crazy, too. So Lucas wanted to, again, he got, like, divorced after Empire and just wanted to, like, again, so he changed lore and Star Wars forever for, like, a personal reason of, like, a great personal reason, wanted to spend more time with his kids, and then went, okay, and I do want it to be neat and wrapped up, so we're going to end this love triangle by being like, oh, they're siblings, so it's clearly Leia and Han.
It's hard to comprehend, I guess, but there really was a point where you're never going to get the chance to make another Star Wars movie, George Lucas. Like, the market just isn't made for more movies. Like, it was never like James Bond or something like that, where it's like James Bond's being recast and these adventures aren't adding up and they're just randomness sometimes.
Yeah.
They don't, it's not all canon. It's like, George, like, no one's gonna want a fourth one. Like, and what are you gonna do? When are you gonna stop? Where's it gonna end? So I feel like part of it was just the climate at the time, where it's just like, what are you talking about, another Star Wars movie? Like, even with Indy, they did a third Indy and it was kind of like, oh, this is it. Like, we've reached the third Indiana Jones.
Literally,
like, we're never
The Last Crusade.
Yeah, we're never gonna do another one, you know. And there was always rumblings of a Ghostbusters 3, where it would be like, yeah, we should do a final Ghostbusters. And it's like, there's just like a mind block on creativity, I feel, at the time, that has been sort of shattered, at least now.
And also the Emperor wasn't gonna be brought into this world too. It was just about him and Darth Vader and defeating Darth.
So a friend of mine gave me this book in high school, which was like a character guide for Star Wars, and in it they had like an Emperor bio and stuff, and there was things in the expanded universe now, Legends, which was like, oh, the Emperor cloned himself, and like, that's what the Clone Wars might have been about, like, there's a younger version of him frozen somewhere, and they're just gonna revive him, and he's gonna be back.
Yeah.
That never came to pass.
And that's, again, he's never referred to as Palpatine, he's just the Emperor.
And he is in the book, which is interesting, because the book came out 2 weeks before the movie, or something
like
that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just recently, he was given a first name.
Oh, right. What is it?
S-H-R-E-E-V.
Shreve?
Yeah.
That is the worst.
I know, it's really bad. Star Wars, honestly, like, gets the best names.
And the worst
and
names.
And the worst names.
Yeah.
Like, I love that his name is Rio Durant, is Jon Favreau's character.
That's
and that's
cool.
Amazing, because it's the song Rio and Durant Durant. Rio Durant.
Very nice.
That's a cool name, especially for that kind of character. Like, it fits that character.
Lando Calrissian. I mean, that rolls off your tongue.
Just like Colt 45.
Exactly.
And there's the outfit.
He's here in his skiff gear.
Yeah, and we get the...
We never see the depths of Lando's closet. It's like Link's backpack. You could just put what... You know, Link from Zelda, the Zelda games, like, it's just, where does he carry all that shit all the time? That's like Lando's closet. You don't know what's like in the back of Lando's closet. He could have all types of costumes going on back there.
We saw some of the capes, and then again, so we get, and it's cool that then Han wears the same thing that Lando's wearing in this movie.
At the end of the last movie, Lando was dressed like Han. He's wearing like the black vest.
Yeah, Han is a vest guy, Lando is a cape guy, okay?
I love it.
Oh, going off it, since I was just talking about, well, I guess they're more 70s than 80s, 70s and 80s, but since I just brought up Duran Duran, I never knew that Joseph Williams, the lead singer of Toto, is John Williams' son.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah, I never knew that.
He did music for Return of the Jedi.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
There's at least like two new themes in this. We get the Emperor's theme, which is just like this, which is basically like, oh, oh, oh.
Which is really cool.
It's so haunting.
Yeah.
And it fits him perfectly. It's almost as if that sound's coming from him.
Well, what's really... And then there are certain things that they do well in the prequels, and I love that really weird space water bubble opera thing. And it's a very similar... The music in there is very similar to the first theme.
It's just like
I love
wire
weird scenes, and that's why we love Bogola, and you know,
the Bogolette makes you forget. The other music I really like in here is the Ewok theme. It's great.
It's very Seven Dwarves. Hi ho, hi ho.
Oh, it's a good call. Yeah, I never really put that together. They are very much like,
you know,
a community of that.
Like,
but I also get the idea that they're like, all right, let's go like kill a Garfnok and like eat that, and like, all right, it's gonna take 12 of us. Better take 20 just to be sure. Ewoks are a dime a dozen. There's so many of them. Of course, we get the return of the Great Imperial March, and you know, Luke's
So it might be my favorite moment is when Darth is taunting Luke, and he goes, "Sister, and your thoughts have betrayed you," and just like, and if you can turn, maybe she will. And then Luke just totally then like goes to the dark side, pretty much. You know, and then there's, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it, because honestly, I mean, like, I love my father, we have a very healthy relationship, but I think as a boy, that's your biggest, like, you know,
it's thing, your
like,
father figure.
He's a father figure, but like, that's, I mean, that's why those stories have existed, you know, since like freaking Oedipus Rex, like the whole father son dynamic. And so that's just, you know, then this is to the extreme of that as well, and just that conflict of, you know, father and son, and just when there's that dolly shot that's tracking along with them.
Oh, as they're fighting?
You know, because it's not a long battle between them, and it's just because Luke is, like, embracing, like, the dark side and the hate at that moment, and defeats Darth before, you know, he goes on his knee and then chops off his hand, but then he has that awesome moment of looking at his robot hand and the chopped-off hand of Darth and realizing, like, oh, shit, like, that's my father and that's what he went through. I say all that because I love, again, it's the very core, like, when they're battling. That's like what gives me, they're coming back again, like that's what gives me like goosebumps, the chills, the, what is it, the wills, the guardian of the wills,
the guardian of the chills. Oh man, I love it. Well, that for me is what this movie is all about. If you cut all the Luke, Vader, Emperor stuff together, it's only like 40 minutes or something like that, but that is basically all Lucas had left to tell, and then they had to craft like all this other stuff around it, you know. That's why we get 30 minutes in the beginning to rescue Han, and that's why we get the infiltrating the Ewok thing, and I think it's good. He made it work, but that works best for me is the Vader Luke stuff in this movie. Is, I just think it's terrific because they've both sort of come to a revelation. The idea that in Empire, that Luke finds out Vader's his dad is a blow to Luke, but Vader also finds out that he has a way out to be free of the Emperor. So it's extremely emotionally charged, even though we're not seeing it or they're not really talking about it all that much. There's a lot going on in their heads.
Well, way out, what are you saying for that? Because like in Empire, he says like, we could rule the galaxy as father and son, but are you saying it as a way out as...
Well, just as a way out from under the thumb of the emperor, okay. Or just a way to change things. Like, yeah, just a way out of the way things are, like a new way to do something. And I think it's as much in this movie, I think Vader is dealing with the revelation that he has a son as much as Luke is dealing with the fact that he has a dad, that they have found this out about each other is, to me, especially watching it again this time, seeing the way Vader ultimately acts towards the end, it felt very much like they're trying to say these guys are the same person. Like, they're cut from the same cloth. They're the same person. Luke is trying to be his father by dressing all in black, but also trying to defy his father at the same time by crafting his own identity. It's way more, like, charged than I remembered, because I never analyzed a Star Wars movie before in my life. Like, I never got deep into, like, you know, let's apply everything I learned in film school to analyze a Star Wars film.
You know, Lucas takes from what has always been best, and, you know, from Joseph Campbell's A Hero's Journey to then going to the enjoyment of Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon, but then some Kurosawa thrown in there for flavor, and the Shakespeare stuff too. So two obviously very different I mean, George Lucas is so much more of a storyteller than a director, but then to go to another director like Tarantino, like, he learned a long time ago there's people that have done it amazing already, let me do the best I can from what I learned and what I loved of those filmmakers and those storytellers. And that's when the same thing Nicholas Winding Refn and, like, what he's learned from filmmakers over the years. I think just the most brilliant people are the people that realize that there's other brilliant people.
Yeah, he even claims, you know, he's way more of a visual director. He's not, like, he's like, my movies, you could basically...
not an actor's director.
Yeah, but he also said you could basically take all the dialogue out of my movies, and that's cool. Just watch them with the soundtrack, and, like, that's all I'm trying to accomplish.
And to quote our sound professor from college, that's what he said, you know, and this is from a sound guy. He says, the best movies are the ones that you can turn off the sound and know exactly what's going on.
That's funny, applied to Star Wars, because, like, I would watch the prequels with the sound off any day before turning that dialogue back on. We'll get to those episodes. Yeah. Should we talk about some Yoda?
Who wasn't in the first draft of the screenplay?
I find that hard to believe. I feel like of all the checkpoints, it's rescue Han, go back to Yoda, finish my training, confront Darth Vader. Do you have any idea what that plan was supposed to entail? Was there another character? Was it just Force Ghost Kenobi?
Well, and then another idea of, and, like, I don't know if it was written into script form, but an idea was Obi-Wan coming back to life.
Oh, actually flesh and blood.
Flesh and blood. Because clearly there's much more of a story between Obi-Wan, Luke, you know, Anakin, and Darth, like, it was, you know, since Obi-Wan was the
I
one
see.
That took down.
Okay, well, so in book club, it's not even a very long passage. Why don't I just tease it right now? But here on page 66, because it's right around the time we're talking about, where when Obi-Wan shows up and tells Luke about his sister, and they hit him across the galaxy and split them up, and that whole thing.
Isn't it a little weird that Yoda uses his last breath to say there is another Skywalker, and he could have just been like, Leia is your sister.
Well, I understand where the Jedi are kind of coming from. It's a lesson until the bitter end. He can only lead them so far. Luke has to have this realization himself. So this is what's crazy. Let me just read this real quick. Luke tried to comprehend what his old teacher was saying. So much information, so fast, so vital, it almost made him swoon. Ben continued his narrative. When your father left, he didn't know your mother was pregnant. But we wanted to keep you both as safe as possible. For as long as possible. So I took you to live with my brother Owen on Tatooine.
What? My brother?
Yeah. And your mother took Leia to live as the daughter of Senator Organa on Alderaan.
Yeah, so it, no, the mother... Yeah, I read that. The mom was supposed to be a handmaiden.
Oh, she was supposed to be like a Padme?
Yeah, like how Padme...
And, like, see her own daughter raised in secret and shit? Yeah, so right here you have Luke's mom... or Luke and Leia's mom was alive for a while. She didn't die on the operating table or giving birth. And that Uncle Owen is Ben Kenobi's biological brother. Kind of crazy, considering that this book makes a point of saying it's canon by listing all the only other books that are in canon on the front flap since the Disney took over.
Oh, wait. That book is published after Disney.
So this edition of Return of the Jedi came out after Disney took control. Oh. So there's ads for the books that are canon only, not the expanded universe, which is now legend. So in here it says, here's the story of Star Wars, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, the Clone Wars TV series, the book Dark Disciple, the movie Revenge of the Sith, the book Lords of the Sith, the book Tarkin, the book A New Dawn, the TV series Rebels. Then comes A New Hope.
Wow.
Then the book Heir to the Jedi and the book Battlefront Twilight Company. Then comes Empire, then Jedi, then Aftermath, which is a book, I guess, about Aftermath. If I had to guess. And then Force Awakens. So this was published before Rogue One came out, this reprinting. So up until 2015.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. I mean, everybody is so tight and meticulous of trying to course correct the canon. And
weird.
Someone, there's an oversight. There's a big oversight right
That's
here.
A
but
huge oversight.
Kind of cool. I like it because it explains. I know you and I have always talked about our ideal Kenobi movie. Okay, and I think I might have mentioned to you, it's him and Owen Lars teaming up to go, someone has discovered some Luke maybe, or someone, maybe there's an Inquisitor, and it's Ben and Owen, like, on an adventure together, and by the end, there's some very bad blood, and that's why he's like, stay away from him.
Yeah.
Never go by that guy again. But I also now like the idea that they could have had a big brotherly falling out also.
Well, like a brotherly falling out and like the jealousy of like, he's got powers but I don't.
Oh, I like that. There's not much of a difference between a Force ghost and a hologram as far as they look. The holograms have a little more blue in them, a little less color.
Yeah, and there's like a shimmering around the Force ghosts.
The rest of this movie is like, it's remarkable how little kind of happens. They rendezvous with the fleet and they go over the whole Endor plan, but the next big...
Many Boffins died.
Okay, so Mon Mothma's back.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think she got demoted after her bad call at the Battle of Scarif, where she's like, we're not going to send people to Scarif, and then Jyn Erso and Rogue One went on their own to Scarif, and then suddenly a bunch of ships showed up? Do you think they were like, that was a bad call, Mon Mothma. You got to sit out the next plan. Because she's not at Battle of Yavin.
No, I think the whole thing with that now is like, she's so important to the Rebellion that obviously they knew that there's a chance that the Star's going to blow up Yavin, get her.
They're playing hot potato with her.
Yeah, she's in like, you know,
she was sent,
that's the whole thing. Not
she's
all,
in hiding.
Not all of the fleet was at Yavin because in case it went wrong, they kind of just
because they just had Scarif. They just had that big, they just lit a fire under the Empire's ass with that victory.
So cool.
Yeah, so we get Mon Mothma, we get that great line, many Bothans died, and we get Mon Calamari.
It's a trick. That was the original line. And it didn't,
so did
and
he
it didn't
misread it?
Well.
Oh, it didn't test well. It's interesting because I think Lando realizes it's a trap and he says so. And at one point he goes, it's a trap.
They're not, what is it? I mean, it happens in the movie.
But the shields are still up, but they're jamming their frequencies.
They're jamming the frequencies. Why would they jam them unless...
Right, unless the shield is still up.
Yeah.
But my favorite by far sequence in this movie when I was a little kid, it blew my mind. And it's still pretty awesome, although I could see the seams. The speeder bike chase.
Oh, so cool. And I've been to the Muir Woods, and I played that theme, and I was like,
What's amazing is how simple it was for them to create that speed effect.
Mm-hmm.
The inventor of the Steadicam actually there on set, operating it, going one frame per second, I think.
Yeah, one frame per second, and then you put that to 23 frames per second,
and
it's the illusion of
looks
the
like
speed.
It's speeding. And then to go the reversed angle, they just ran it backwards.
That's awesome.
So they didn't even shoot it twice.
Yeah. That's just, to quote Donald Kaufman, trick photography. And again, like you said, like the practical effects and then the puppetry, like they just went all out. But I read something that Ian McDiarmid, you know, the Emperor, they had in that throne that was supposed to be like, you know, turns and everything.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be mechanized, but it wasn't working. So he shuffles his feet to move.
Oh, brilliant. He's a real, it's a shame there's not enough of him on the audio commentary because he's a real joy when he explains.
He's one of the better parts of the movie.
What it was like as an outsider, basically coming in on the third and final film, and he's like, he just couldn't believe how mind-blowing it was, and he basically had free rein to do what he wanted with the character, and it just aligned exactly,
he's,
I guess,
really
with what Lucas
cool
was,
guy and
was
just
looking
a great,
for,
like stage actor, and just there's a lot of really interesting things, just even choices he made for the performance.
Thanks.
There's so many, like a good solid handful of directors up for this. David Lynch, Spielberg.
He came very close to doing episode 3, which I'll have you back for.
Do you remember one of the, I'm sure there were other names, but the one that always stuck in my head that was up for Attack of the Clones?
Not Attack of the Clones. I knew Ron Howard was offered episode 1, but I don't know any of the Attack of the Clone trivia.
Spike Jones.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that weird?
I don't know, man.
And Spielberg was recommending somebody, Verhoeven.
No kidding. Wow.
Spielberg recommended that, but then Verhoeven made a movie that was, like, very edgy.
Like most of his movies.
Most of his movies.
But a great sci-fi director in his own right.
Spielberg saw that and just went, like, I'm not gonna...
He's way too edgy, especially if you consider RoboCop and Starship Troopers.
If you have a movie with Ewoks, Wookiees instead of Ewoks, and we know that Wookiees will pull arms out of sockets, that's Verhoeven.
Ewoks... eat people, dude.
Okay, but we don't...
Ewoks are gonna eat Han Solo without a thought in the world, except for how full they're gonna be.
I'm so happy, like, I know we get, like, in this version that's on the background, Ewoks blink and stuff. I'm so happy there wasn't, like, all of a sudden, like, a CGI, like, imagine, like, I could see in another version of this, like, their mouths spreading and seeing, like, sharp teeth.
Oh, like a second set or something? Yeah. That's, like, the Lynch version of Ewok, where, like, they salivate blood.
Galaxy Quest.
Right, exactly. Well, that's a total play on an Ewok. Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, I feel like they're savage. I feel like they get the point across. The thing about them is strength in numbers. Because we saw in Kessel, there were a couple Wookiees there. They couldn't escape. There was like 6 or 7. They couldn't get out.
Their spirits were just crushed anyway.
Well, that could be too. And we don't know what kind of effects the spice has on the prisoners too. And they looked kind of gaunt. Yeah. But the thing about Ewoks, strength in numbers, man, they just keep throwing Ewoks at the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it takes. It's like just this bombardment.
Yeah, but it makes sense versus like Lord of the Rings. It's like they write themselves into a corner. Send in the Eagles.
Well, that's what's so that's what's so cool about Star Wars is that I always feel like the Rebels are constantly backed up into a corner. Like always. They're always just about to lose. Like this could very well be the last days of the Rebellion. And when they get to the base on Endor, without the Ewoks, they would have lost. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like if it was just that ragtag group of Rebels on the ground, like they're done for completely. And all hope is lost. And thankfully, I guess it is the will of the Force that Leia ultimately meets up with Wicket. They should be very thankful that there was that little detour that they had there.
Which is just, I mean, Star Wars nature anyway. Happens in the world, and that's just what also Star Wars is good. You know,
there's a lot of amazing stuff about the Ewoks in the novelization. Really flesh out their core beliefs about nature and ideology. I mean, they're not aware of the Force by name, but believe it or not, Luke and Leia in the book teach them a lot about what the Force means and what they're about and what they're trying to do and overthrow the Empire and like we're the good guys, and the Ewoks completely get it.
Yeah.
They totally understand it.
Well, they have their deity that like, and I think
their golden god.
Yeah.
I feel like that is totally Lucas saying don't worship technology. Worshipping technology and false idols is a crutch, and even the Ewoks come to understand that, like, oh, he's not a god, he's just a creation by these people. These are the creators, they're the engineers. Like, if anything, we should have been bowing to them, but they know humans because they've had 2 Ewok movies that took place between Empire and Jedi, so they've been exposed to battle. They're hardened. By this point, the time the Rebels show up, they are ready to fight.
Again, not that they're good movies, but then my imagination goes, and I was saying this before we started recording, I said... that kind of, to me, like, lends itself that they were, in a way, like, more battle-hardened and prepared by the time this movie happens. And not that that film addresses that. And again, they're not, like, they're good movies. They're entertaining, especially when you're a kid and you're watching them. But, like, not that that's what that film is about. And I said, oh, I would love at the end of the second Ewok adventure movie that if all of a sudden when that spaceship flies off, then all of a sudden a Star Destroyer comes...
come out of hyperspace. Like,
yeah.
And you recognize the ship and you're like, oh, they're about to drop off some materials.
They have that insight that like now that they're doing with all the new movies, but again that just makes it fun in my mind that I'm just like these guys, like, they just fought wizards and
Night Witch of Dathomir,
which is one of Darth Maul's mothers,
because those films are canon now at this point. Even the character Sindel, the little girl, she's now grown up and she's like a reporter or something like that. Like she had a life after her parents and brother got savagely murdered by marauders on Endor, and she had to team up with Wilford Brimley. So Wilford Brimley is like a kind old man in that movie. Noah, she and Wilford Brimley eventually escape Endor together on a rocket ship, and she goes on to grow up and be okay. She's fine. She's not like a freedom fighter or anything, but she like works as like a newscaster or something.
Does she die in Force Awakens, maybe? Because she's in that... what's that?
She might be. The Hanzi? Is it the Hanzian system? The Manzi system?
The Manzi system.
Finn is familiar with the weapon that destroyed the Hosnian system. He worked on the base.
Ah, the Hosnian system. Well played, Poe Dameron. That's going to do it for part one of Return of the Jedi. So many impressions in this episode. Come back soon to hear much more about the movie, our thoughts on the entire series in general, and of course, Book Club. This time, with a special twist. That's right, my young Padawans, I take Book Club to the next level, so make sure you tune in for that, or your Jedi training will not be complete. New show alert, new show alert, new show alert. This month, Joey and I are launching a brand new project called Tom Tom Club, where we watch all the films in both Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks' filmography. It's two separate shows, Cruise Club and Hanks for the Memories, on two different feeds, but they equal one big project, the Tom Tom Club, so please check that out. For all things Third Time's a Charm, go to cageclub.me, where you can find all the past episodes of this show and over 20 other great podcasts on the network. You can also go to the show page to see all the links that I post and all the photos and follow along to all the things we talked about during the show. Rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever podcasts live. Write me at 3@cageclub.me. That's T-H-R-E-E at cageclub.me. Do you have a good name for a Star Wars podcast? What's your favorite or most obscure Star Wars reference? Do you have any comments or questions about any episode of Third Time's a Charm, or just want to say hi? Please don't hesitate to write. Cage Club has also launched a Patreon page where you can support the show, get exclusive content, and even control what we watch. So head on over to cageclub.me for all the links to everything the network has to offer. Until next time, I'm your host Mike, and this is Third Time's a Charm.
That's a magic number.
Three.
Yes, it is. It's the magic number.
Three
may stub at me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?